Fanning, weekends on 2FM.
Brian, how you doing? Are you all right?
I'm very good. How are you?
You're not in your car, are you?
No. I'm sitting comfortably in my office listening to you.
Okay, very good. Okay, Brian Redden is the voice you're hearing there. A Hollywood legend. No, not Brian Redden. That's later on. I want to take a look at a Hollywood legend, an icon of the silver screen, a trailblazer for generations of black movie stars, the first black man to ever win a Best Actor Oscar. I'm talking about the actor Sidney Poitier, who died yesterday at the age of 94. So Brian Redden, as in film and TV director and IFTA winner, he joins me now to talk about the life and work of one of the greats. So, background of Sidney, Brian, tell me.
Yeah, he was one of the greats, you're right. And at 94, he had a long innings. And he's one of the last of these great kind of Hollywood icons, really, you know. You have Clint Eastwood still making movies there at 91 years of age. But there's not many around. And in fact, Poitier really hasn't made a film in the last 20 years. His last screen appearance was in 2001. And in fact, throughout his career, he wasn't really hugely prolific in terms of making movies. He made 55 films in his entire career, which isn't a lot considering how long his career spanned. But to give you his background, he was born, his family are from the Bahamas, but he happened to be born by pure accident in Miami, because he came from a family, his father was a tomato grower, and they used to travel from the Bahamas to Miami to sell their wares. And during one of those trips, with his wife, Sidney was born prematurely, 2 months prematurely. In fact, almost didn't survive. So because he was born in Miami, it automatically entitled him to American citizenship, even though he was raised in the Bahamas and always considered himself a resident of the Bahamas and how do you pronounce that? Is it Bahamian or Bahamian? Bahamian citizen. In fact, you know, he was very close to the Bahamas, and later on in life, he became a diplomat, and he was actually
for 10 years,
the Bahamian ambassador to Japan for 10 years. Yeah. So anyway, he grows up there and he grows up dirt poor, and he moves to Miami eventually, and then on to New York, where he joins the army during the Second World War. And he's actually doesn't see any service. He's stationed in a hospital in upstate New York. And when he leaves the army, he's got the acting bug. But remember, he was poor. He wasn't very well read. And he had this very thick accent from the Bahamas. So he went along and auditioned for, at the time, it was a very famous theatrical group run by Harry Belafonte, among other people, called the American Negro Theatre. And he auditioned for that and didn't get any parts, because his accent was so heavy and so thick, and really he had no experience as an actor. But a landlord took him under his wing and actually taught him how to read. And he changed his accent by listening to the radio and developed this kind of very clipped, pronounced accent that he had then for the rest of his life. And in fact, his voice was one of the things you always remember and recognise about Sidney Poitier. He had this very distinctive, cultured voice that he learned from listening to the radio. So he goes back to the African theatre and he ends up being a leading man on stage. And eventually Hollywood comes calling. So his first kind of major role in Hollywood was as a...
I'm just going to interrupt you there for a second, because I'll tell you what I do here. I'm just, as you've been talking about it, here he is talking about coming to New York at the age of 15.
Okay. In the window, there's a sign that says, relief dishwasher wanted. And I went down there and they put me to work. Not only did they put me to work, they were paying $4 a night. And I could eat for 3 meals. So when I finished the first night's work, I went to the bus station, got my little valise out, intending not to spend my $4 as I spent my $3. I went to sleep in the toilet. Used to be pay toilets and it cost a nickel. So I put a nickel in the thing, and I got in, I put down the seat, I sat there, put my feet up against the door, and I would sleep.
Did you ever sleep in a toilet, Brian?
Oh, loads of times, but not intentionally.
Okay,
just woke up there.
That's a piece from ABC News, Sidney Poitier. Now, you were just about to star Brian Redden on the movies.
He had such a great voice, didn't he? It's so
yeah,
such
fantastic.
A distinctive voice.
Yeah,
you can listen to him all day. So yeah, so he started getting these roles. First of all, as kind of a juvenile delinquent in Blackboard Jungle in 1955. Glenn Ford played a teacher, and he was his student who eventually comes good. And that got him noticed by Hollywood. And he started to get some very, very interesting roles, even though he still worked as a dishwasher and in other menial jobs, even when he was making movies. The first film that I think really set him apart and was really distinctive, and one of his earlier performances that I love, is a film called The Defiant Ones, which he made in 1958. And there's a really simple premise, but basically himself and Tony Curtis play two convicted criminals who are on a chain gang, and they're shackled together and they escape. And Tony Curtis is a bigot, and he's chained to this black man in the southern states of America, and they have to learn to get on in order to survive because they can't break the chains between them. So it's a bit heavy on the symbolism, but it was actually a really, really interesting film, I thought. And that was The Defiant Ones in 1958. So he continued to kind of defy expectations, because apart from The Defiant Ones, in which he played a criminal, and in Blackboard Jungle when he was a juvenile delinquent, by and large, in the 50s and 60s, he always played very educated men. Yeah. He played doctors, he played musicians, he played lawyers, he played cops, detectives. You know, he did not... The reason he was so groundbreaking was that he did not accept the stereotypical roles that were offered to black actors at that time.
But
which were always the villain.
Many years before that, didn't he play kind of against Richard Widmark in a movie, same kind of thing, who was a bit of a bigot, wasn't he? Or he was a racist.
Yeah. He was, yeah. He played a doctor in that. And that was, again, one of his earlier roles. And that was called No Way Out. And Richard Widmark played this bigot in it. And he starts this race riot. And he's a patient of the doctor played by Sidney Poitier. So, yeah, he done that. He did that in 1950, which even predated Blackboard Jungle. So he was kind of an interesting guy who always sought out these roles, which... We'll talk about it in a sec, but that actually led to him, a bit of a backlash to him. But before we get to that, like, interesting, he made some interesting films. And you got to remember the America he was living in at the time. Like, for example, in 1961, he made a film called Paris Blues. Again, it's one of my favourites, with Paul Newman. They play two jazz musicians in Paris. And in that film, in 1961, he kisses a white woman in it. And that scene where he kisses a white woman had to be removed from the film when it played in the southern states of America, because it would have caused riots. Which is unbelievable when you think about it now. But that scene was removed from the movie. So in 1963, he goes on and he wins an Oscar, and he becomes the first black actor, male actor, to win an Oscar. That has to be pointed out, because Hattie McDaniel had already won a Best Supporting Actress Oscar for her role in Gone with the Wind many years previously, although she wasn't allowed to attend the ceremony because it was segregated at the time. But in 1963, he comes along and he really breaks down barriers and he wins the Oscar. But he himself felt, you know, ambivalent about it. He was delighted with the honour, obviously, but he did feel that it was almost like white Hollywood clapping themselves on the back and being a bit tokenism. So in 1963, he kind of withdrew from films for a little bit because he was a bit wary of how Hollywood were perceiving him. So even then, he was questioning things. But I think the highlight of his career was 1967. In 1967, Sidney Poitier made three movies in a row. To Sir With Love, in which he now played the teacher in a reversal of roles from Blackboard Jungle, set in the UK with Lulu, obviously, as one of the young students, and the famous song To Sir With Love. He also made In the Heat of the Night, and then his crowning glory, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Yeah. Those two films, In the Heat of the Night and Guess Who's Coming, made in the same year, 1967, three movies in the one year. Yeah. Unbelievable.
Incidentally, all of which I've seen, but I haven't seen the 64 movie where he won the Oscar for it with Lilies of the Valley. Is it any good?
It's all right. It hasn't aged well. I've seen it a couple of times and it hasn't aged well. So basically he plays this drifter. He's a handyman and he comes across a group of German nuns who are based in this convent in the southern states of America, and he helps them to build a chapel. They come to understand him. He comes to understand them. Again, it wouldn't be one of his greatest roles. And it was, you know, that's why he felt it was a bit tokenism when he won the Oscar for it. It hasn't aged well. It's a bit melodramatic, I think.
Let's go back to 67 where you were with the three big movies. Take a look at that.
Yeah, To Sir With Love wouldn't be a favourite of mine. It's a bit, you know, twee, but he's very strong in it. But In the Heat of the Night, oh, he is just sublime in that. In the Heat of the Night, he plays a detective, a Philadelphia detective called Virgil Tibbs, who's brought down to the southern states of America to investigate a murder. And he comes across a bigoted cop played brilliantly by Rod Steiger. And in a very classic scene in that, he's saying, "Well, boy, you're coming down from Philadelphia, boy. What do they call you up in Philadelphia, boy?" And he just looks at him and he stares him straight in the eye and he says, "They call me Mr. Tibbs." Mm. And it was just such a great moment. And I think that really is the epitome of what he stood for on screen in terms of the way he approached racism. He always approached racism on screen with an element of understanding, an element of forgiveness, and an element of stoicism. He wasn't the guy who was the radical guy who was going to punch the guy in the face. Mm. He always was restrained and refrained. And like, he did the same thing in Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. Now, bear in mind, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner, great film. Catherine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy, again, 1967. Their daughter, played by Catherine Houghton, who was Catherine Hepburn's real-life niece, actually, brings home a black man played by Sidney Poitier, who's a doctor, and she wants to marry him. And they're very liberal, they're very cool, and they're very left-wing, but they start to question their own inherent prejudice.
Well, here, I'll give you a tiny bit of this. Spencer Tracy in this one, too.
Would you think it was some kind of cowardice if I told you that no matter how confident you two are, I'm just a little scared?
No, it wouldn't. But you never know. Things are changing.
I have a feeling they're not changing anywhere else quite as fast as they are in my own backyard. Just tell me this. Don't you think this quick decision about how we feel about this thing is just a little unfair?
In a way, I do. But it wasn't my idea that everything be settled so quickly. Your daughter said that there's no problem. She said, my dad is a lifelong fighting liberal who loathes race prejudice and has spent his whole life fighting against discrimination. She said, my parents, well, they'll welcome me with open arms. And I said, oh, I sure want to meet them.
Okay, so Brian, that's 67 right now. Just let's take a look. The radical 60s overall, though, he was a bit unfashionable, wasn't he?
He was. Now, listen, bear in mind, in 67, when he made that film, interracial marriage was illegal in 17 states. Illegal, yeah. Still in 17 states. So in his own way, he was, you know, he was fighting racism. But the radical movement in the 90s didn't see it that way. And he did fall out of favor because they saw this man as the white man's version of what a black man should be. Polite, yeah. Well-spoken, yeah. You know, who did not, you know, fight against the system. And therefore, he kind of fell out of favour a wee bit. And he reacted to that by withdrawing from the movies, essentially, and becoming a director. He didn't act as much in the late 1960s and throughout the 70s. He directed a trio of comedies with Bill Cosby, which I have to say, I loved at the time, but we're not allowed to watch them anymore now because of Bill Cosby. But he made three movies in a row, Uptown Saturday Night, Let's Do It Again, and A Piece of the Action, all of which he directed, which are kind of silly little comedies with him and Bill Cosby. And then in 1977, he stopped acting for 10 years. In fact, one of his best movies as a director, a lot of people don't know, he directed was Steer Crazy.
The Gene great, Wilder.
Yeah, the great Pryor. Prison comedy with Gene Wilder and Richard Pryor. So he retreats for acting for about 10 years from 1977 to 1987 because he was pissed off at the way people were treating him and the way he said himself at one point that he felt that every role he took on, he had to it was a role that he had to represent 16 million Americans. Yeah. And that was too heavy a weight for him to bear. Yeah. So he retreats from acting and eventually it comes back in small roles up until about 2001 when he retires completely and lives out his
life. Which is what we're going to do now. Brian yeah. Redden. Listen, Brian, thank you so much for filling us in. Sidney Poitier it is, who died yesterday at the age of 94. Thanks, Brian. See you next time.
Very welcome.
Good luck.
See
All
you.
Right, take it easy.
Dave Fanning, weekends on 2FM.